mean, first of all, thanks for choosing us over Lizzo.
This is all about to see what you can and can't do. And when you compete in our league, it'll tell you.
Welcome back to the 920 Podcast. I'm your host, Logan Quinton, joined alongside my partner in crime, Bill Monnett. We're here to talk about the Vols as they fly south to face the Gators this weekend on another Thursday through Saturday slate. Bill, how's it going, man? This speaking of Florida, it feels like Florida weather here. I think we're getting a little bit of a early summer. How are you hanging in there?
Doing okay. It's finally, if the weather will just stay warm and stop going from summer to winter to fall to spring all in a matter of 36 hours, we'll quit having allergy issues and we can get into a late spring summer mode, which that's my favorite time of the year.
Yeah, me too. I was guessing you're going to be with me on that, considering the Texas and Tennessee ties that you have. Yep. And I love the warm weather. I will never complain how hot it gets. Like you said, the toughest thing this time of the year as things warm up are the allergies. Yep. And boy, last night Lipscomb was quite the allergy for Tennessee. But yeah, as far as the weather goes, couldn't be better in my mind. Perhaps the Vols bats will heat up as this weather warms up as well. Call me a reptile and amphibian, but don't call me a gator. I love the hot weather, but definitely no gator in that regard. But Tennessee, they're going to have to head south to Gainesville, Condren Family Ballpark. Florida 23-21 on the year, 9-12 in the conference. The Vols 37-8 overall after the loss to Lipscomb in the midweek performance. Still 15-6 overall. So yeah, this is really, I think, a pivot point for Florida. They've been really underwhelming this year. They've been on quite the journey to kind of battle back and see if they can get into the NCAA tournament. Kind of hard to imagine, saying that at this point, but they've just not figured out things, whether from the mound or offensively. It's been the Jackie Cagg show, and that's about it in terms of the offense. What sticks out to you, Bill, when you think about these two teams and what these last few weekends remaining mean for both?
Well, first of all, Florida, as you mentioned, 9-12 in the SEC. If they want to make the NCAA tournament, they need to win this series, at least two out of three, yeah, this series, because, they're just struggling. You just look back that they were swept by Missouri. My gosh, how did that happen? That just can't happen to a Florida team. So they're in a mode where it's must win time, and they've got to at least win the series. Now, Tennessee, you and I talked last week. We thought they had a good shot at sweeping the Missouri series. But, Logan, I don't know about you, but I never envisioned the sweep happening like it did. Thursday night was a good night, a normal night. But then Friday, Saturday, you win 3-2 games. You don't hit the ball out of the ballpark. You get good enough pitching. Fortunately, the pitching was very good, and Tennessee was able to sweep the series. Then you follow that up with what we saw last night against David Lipscomb. The bats just quit, They basically made a guy with almost a 10 ERA look like Greg Maddux out there for about six innings last night. Now, granted, there were some balls hit to the wall. There were four or five balls literally that were caught by the outfielder, the Lipscomb outfielder, either with his back up against the wall or at least his hand on the wall, one or the other. But that's what this team's got to figure out how to do. When you don't hit those balls out of the ballpark, you've got to figure out a way to string some hits together and put some runs on the scoreboard nonetheless. And, these last three games, we've seen what happens when a Tennessee team doesn't hit the ball out of the ballpark. And, that's got to change. Florida's good enough. They're a good enough team, very talented team. If you don't go to Florida and you don't play well, you could easily come out losing the series if not being swept.
Yeah, and just very quickly on Missouri, looking back at that, you said it well. I mean, we thought there was a great chance for the sweep, but not like that. I did not see one run games, you know, 3-2 apiece the last two games. I did not envision that. I will say this, though. I think you and I talked about it. Missouri was at optimal performance from the pitching mound. Yeah, there was some guys that were kind of getting out on front, you know, had some poor at bats and things like that. But still, yet, I really feel like that's probably the best Missouri's going to look from the mound going forward. That was probably their peak performance. And that's without Javon Pimentel. He ended up not throwing over the week.
Yep. Yep.
And yeah. Boy, if you would have told me that, I would have said, I would have guaranteed the sweep with it, because he has been the rock in that weekend rotation. And then you get performances from Lunsford and Rustad and the like. You know, I know Lunsford, the numbers don't quite show it because he tailed off there at the end, but I thought Lunsford early on was very, very good. I like the stuff I saw from him. But no, regardless, yeah, the Vols left a lot of meat on the bone in that Missouri series. And then it carried over to Lipscomb. And I guess we'll get into it, but we'll get into the Hot Works segment right now. Because for one, the bats need to hit, maybe they need to hit the sauna. They need some infrared. The Vols have averaged just 4 runs in their last 3 games. But you know, if we have to go with a Hot Works hot hand, I'm taking a little bit of a different route with this one. I want to bring up Cal Stark, because I think if you go back to the Kentucky series and then into the Missouri series, man, he's a catcher's catcher, and I think he's probably won you. You could argue he's won you a couple of games going back to that Kentucky series. This, with what he's done defensively, and then obviously he's had some moments. What he had 3 RBI in that first game against Missouri.
Yeah, you look at the numbers. He's hitting .262, and you know, while that doesn't jump off the page at you, that .262, he's had some huge hits in that time frame, especially, you know, last week at Kentucky, and defensively, you know, you and I talked about this through a text message exchange. You know, at the beginning of the year, I wouldn't have given you a nickel to say that Cal Stark had a chance to play pro ball. But I think after his performance so far this year, he's going to get a shot with somebody. You know, he handles a pitching staff so well. He's so good defensively, really good at the back pick. We've seen that a couple of times the last couple of weekends. So Cal Stark's going to get an opportunity in pro ball with somebody.
Yeah, I think so. And if that opportunity is there and is a reality, it's likely to be this summer. Yeah. And yeah, that's very interesting. You know, it's obviously we've known about the defense and the rapport he has with the clubhouse and the pitchers, but man, I my apologies to Cal Stark, because I may be about to jinx him, but if you would have given me .262, slugging nearly 600, he's just sniffing 600 and slugging. He's already eclipsed his RBI total from last year in just 61 at bats. I think he had like 111 total last year. 5 home runs. He's matched the total from last year. If you had given me .262 and slugging .590, I would have taken it in a heartbeat. Because because you match that. You're just looking for a complimentary piece right there offensively, matched with what he means, not just to a clubhouse, but like defensively as well. So that's who I've got to go with to bring up a Hot Works hot hand and kind of go a little bit of a different route, but because I think he's had some moments going back to Kentucky, a game or two there, and then over the weekend against Missouri, where he's been extremely valuable to the win-loss column. We know how valuable he is to this team, but in terms of the win-loss column over the past 2 weekends, you know, I'm going Cal Stark as the difference maker.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good choice. And, you know, going back a little bit to the Missouri series and then to the the Tuesday game this week with David Lipscomb. You know, the Kentucky series was so huge. Everybody was pointing to that Kentucky series. It was 3-4, you know, the three of the four best teams in college baseball. Kentucky was 14-1 in the SEC at the time of the story. You know, they went up there and just had a slugfest. You know, those two teams had a slugfest that weekend. Not surprised that maybe there was a little letdown after that series, because there was so much attention given to that series, and Missouri was supposed to be a pushover. So maybe not all that surprised that this team's had a little bit of letdown. Now, the big question is, okay, they've had the letdown. They've lost, you know, they lost to a mid-major. Now they go to Florida. Can they turn the switch and get that back this week? Because they're going to need to get that back starting Thursday night in Gainesville.
Yes, they will. And, you know, part of the recipe for Lipscomb last night, when you looked after the first five innings, the Vols were trailing. And they now moved to 3-4 on the year when trailing after the first five innings. Those first five innings are usually important to a team's success. So I want to take this time to mention a first five ad campaign we've got going at Hotworks. If you're the first five to enroll at Hotworks, you'll have success in your day-to-day life as well as a chance to enjoy some baseball. Be the first five to enroll at a Knoxville area Hotworks with this ad. Just mention Logan and be entered for a chance to win tickets to the South Carolina series. Vols versus Gamecocks, May 16th through 18th. Terms apply. Just call 865-297-3668. That's the number to Hotworks at Hardin Valley. But if you need another location, we don't want to overload you with all these phone numbers. If you just call in and say, hey, Logan sent me from the radio, from the podcast, but I'm way out here in Fountain City, North Knoxville. Maybe the UT campus location works best for you. Just let them know that. They'll direct you. But if they're taking the first five people to enroll at any of the locations, so 20 total, you will be entered for a chance to win tickets at the last stand, the last home stand against the South Carolina Gamecocks. Bill, we've talked about the infrared saunas and the weather heating up. That series right there, I think, is going to be monumental, and it's going to be on fire and rocking that weekend on Rocky Top.
Absolutely. Always is when those two teams get together, because for some reason the South Carolina just doesn't like Tennessee for any reason. So yeah, that'll definitely be a big weekend, and you know, the last week of the season as well. You know, you could, yeah, you know, South Carolina could still be playing for a spot in the tournament, and so it's going to be big series.
Yeah, I mentioned the numbers when trailing the first five. Here's another couple of notes with that. The Vols have only lost one game when leading after five. That one loss was to Kentucky. They are 2-3 when tied. So that's proved to be pretty telling so far. But three more weekends to go in the SEC and some midweek games. Just to touch on the midweek thing real quick. I think reality is it was bound to happen at some point, considering the tail of the tape this year around the country.
It's happened. It's happened to everybody in the SEC this year already. Yep.
Yeah. UNC Asheville, Southern Indiana, those were one-run games.
Yeah.
And tied after the first five innings. So, you know, there were those moments. But just here of late, ever since then, the midweek has been, you know, it's the Vols go up a few, nice, comfortable. You know, you're like, hey, could this get interesting? Then all of a sudden, you know, everything kind of takes off, turns into a run rule,
right,
or close to it. But yeah, for whatever reason, if you would have told me this matchup, you know, this time last year, wouldn't have surprised me. That Lipscomb team was really good. They were part of that Clemson regional, which I thought was one of the best regionals in the country. But yeah, this Lipscomb team picking up their 16th win on the season against
That Lipscomb team from last year, they lost several players to bigger programs and NIL deals. So, you know, they're a young team now, still got some good hitters, but you know, like I said, you know, the balls that are hit to the wall, you know, if a couple of them go out, it's a totally different situation, you know. But they didn't. One of those nights where they stayed in, Lipscomb was able to make the plays, and you know, that's as is said many times, you know, that's baseball. That's what happens when things don't go, you know, things don't go one way or the other, and the other team makes some plays. You know, anybody can beat anybody.
It's a quad four loss, but one interesting thing about that is, in terms of RPI, is Tennessee, when you look at their remaining schedule with Florida, and then you've got Vandy and South Carolina, all those teams right now in the top 25 in RPI. And even if that changes, even if Florida, say Tennessee takes care of Florida, and Florida continues to spiral, misses the turn, I don't know if they get outside the top 60 in RPI.
No, I don't either. And
if that's the case, this series being on the road, it's going to be quad one.
It is. Because it's on the road. Yeah, we've talked all year about, you know, the magic. If there is a magic number of SEC wins, we need it. You know, we thought 17-ish would probably be that number. Well, this team's got 15, you know, with nine left to go. If they can go 5-4 or even 4-5 in these last nine games, you know, they're going to be at the 20-win plateau. And that's going to be easily good enough to get them into the top eight seed nationally. So, you know, the quad four loss, that's not good. But as I said, you know, there's not too many other SEC teams who haven't had a similar situation in midweek this year. So, you know, it's all still there. You know, if you can get to, especially if you can get to 20, you know, you're in great shape. If you can get to 19, you're in really good shape. So, you know, it's a loss. Nobody liked it, but, you know, you move on and get ready for Thursday in Gainesville.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, you know, the one game you do have at home, South Carolina, or the one series you do have at home with South Carolina, they've been so consistent. There's not a ton of upside with that team, but if there's, you know, the one at home, I expect South Carolina to still be in the top 25 RPI. So it looks like on the weekend, you got nine games left of quad one opportunities.
And going to Nashville, you know, obviously it's Nashville. That's where Vandy is. But, you know, Tennessee's still the flagship state university. There'll be plenty of Tennessee support there that weekend. So while you're technically be on the road, there'll be a lot of Vol fans at Hawkinsville too.
So with a snapshot of Florida, like I said, they're on a 3-9 skid in the SEC, but they've won the past three game threes. Jackie Cagg still hasn't, I know things were a little squirrely early on for him, but he's still not recorded a loss yet, so that's been a part of it. But yeah, they've been able to pick up their game threes the past three weekends to kind of keep them alive, and like I mentioned, Jackie Cags, it's his show. 94 homers for the team. He's got 26, which accounts for 27% of the team's home runs, which is insane.
And if that's not enough, he's 5-0 on the mound for the Florida.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of those guys, you know, he's Todd Helton of this day.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing with this team though, the Gators, and I think it's the key going into this series. A couple of different ways you can put it, but for me, like, that comes to my mind, putting hits together consistently, playing situational ball, that's not their strong suit, but I think that's what they're going to have to do. So I guess another way you can phrase it, hey, can they, you know, can Jackie Cags and the power game, you know, show up? Can, like, a Kobe Shelton show up big time? A Luke Heyman, with it being at home, backs against the wall, and you've got those guys hitting home runs and finding balls deep in the gap. Can they power their way through this series? But, you know, that's – when you look on the other side, lowest ERA in the league, north of six. They have a fair amount of strikeouts. That's not really an issue. I mean, they're able to miss some bats, and they've got some good power arms. But – they're last in the league in giving up walks. They've given up 199 this year. So that's just the free bases and not being able to find anything at all to go along with Jackie Cags on the mound. That's those are the things that that stick out to me? What's some of your questions about this Florida team?
I think that's key, as you mentioned. This Tennessee team, obviously, they swing from the heels and hit home runs, but they're not a team that chases a lot of bad pitches either. So you're going to have to throw. Florida's going to have to throw strikes to beat Tennessee, because they're even the power hitters on this team, they'll take that walk. They'll take the base because they know they've got a good bat coming up behind them. So they're not going to go up there and be overly aggressive and swing at balls out of the strike zone very often. So yes, I think that is definitely key. Is the Florida pitchers, they can't afford to walk a lot of Tennessee batters this weekend. Now, number two is, a couple of years ago, Tennessee went down there and Christian Moore homered in the bottom of or in the top of the ninth to send that game to extra innings on Sunday. Tennessee ended up sweeping that series. So there's several guys on this team who've played at Florida. They're not going to be intimidated. That's a tough place to play. The Florida fans are wicked. They're hard to deal with. But these guys, the leaders on this team, they've been there. They've played there. I think that's a real advantage to have a core group that has already played in that ballpark once, and they know what to expect from the Florida fans.
Yeah, and, we'll get to the weekend rotation here in just a second, but, the thing that sticks out to me in terms of the pitching or guys not being there that you thought would Luke, I mentioned Luke Heyman, that he was all freshman of the world, last year, and now he just hitting 250, and then Brandon Neely from the pitching side. Now he did look better against Arkansas last weekend, but previous two starts before that, South Carolina and Vandy, he gave up 13 runs between the two games. I mean, he's just not been there this year. You were looking at Neely and Cags being some solidified starters on the mound, and then some other intriguing arms, and then nothing has panned out on that side. But and it doesn't feel like a Sully team. It's very odd. They were in the title game last year. Wyatt Langford was really the engine that drove that bus. And then this year you're thinking, maybe Cags is the lead horse and kind of fuels everything this year, but yeah, just missing a lot of components right now. And that I'm not sure. Yeah. Maybe the math, when you think about it, what lies ahead, maybe they could, pick something up and get in the tournament and be dangerous. But I just know, I just really feel like we're going to find out this weekend because like you said, if they can't win it, it kind of feels insurmountable at that point. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So absolutely. You would think so. If they win the series, they'll be 11-13, still a shot there, but if they get swept then or lose the series, it's going to be awfully hard for Florida.
Florida is looking to travel to Lexington after the tango with the Vols. So will be very interesting to see what transpires after this weekend. But let's get into it. What's always slated as the weekend rotation presented by Crumble Cookies. We've got Chris Stamos going up against Pierce Coppola for Florida. Coppola, I'm sure a lot of people now may have heard the name or seen the name, some video floating around on social media. This guy is huge. He's a tall guy, 6'8". so you're coming with some heat from not very far away when he can stretch out and fire it, reach back and fire it in there. 10 strikeouts through 6 innings so far at this point, but he's also getting up 7 runs. They've kept everything short for him up to this point. Everything's kind of routine and scheduled. He's working his way back onto the mound. He missed last year and part of this year recovering from injury. It was like a shoulder or back issue. So what they're going to do is from this point forward, and this could be an X factor for Florida, it's they need help on the mound from the all parts of it, but particularly the starting piece. Mm-hmm. And they don't want this guy going in typical relief, right? Like he has to be on a routine and a scheduled start, because the rest and recovery part of the deal is important early on for him. So we've seen pitch counts, and his highest was last weekend against Arkansas, 3 innings. So I'm wondering if we see kind of that 50 to 60 pitch range this weekend, and maybe give him a little bit of run here. But it's a long, wiry frame with some power behind it. 6'8" fastball slider piece that is going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to that Thursday night matchup to see him. And then you've got Chris Stamos on the other side for the Vols, who's been a good opener. And, you know, that's kind of what you're wanting from him, is 2 to 3 innings. If maybe he can, if he can get you through the lineup one time, that's a plus. And then you can give way to Kazi or whatever takes place at that point and kind of go with the game flow. But we can only guess that it's going to be AJ Kazi getting the ball from Chris Stamos.
Yeah. And, you know, we were worried about Kazi after that Auburn start. But since that point, you know, the last couple of starts, the last couple of games, especially, he's put it back together, and he looks like the Kazi of early in the year. And that's great to see. Tennessee needs him pitching well.
Yeah. And then you've got Drew Beam, as expected, the second game. It'll be, you know, 2 Fridays in a row. So normal routine for these guys. And then going against TBD of Florida, always a 0 ERA for that guy. I'm wondering if they don't give Neely another crack at it here in this spot. I mean, of course, it probably is predetermined on what happens in that game one, but considering Neely's coming off of a good outing against Arkansas, maybe if you don't need him in that game one, maybe he's a guy you roll out there, right, that knows plenty about the, you know, some of these Vols, has been throwing in the SEC plenty of times. Maybe you go that route. And then you've got Xander slated to face Jackie Cags. What a matchup in that one. Like I said, Florida has been really good in game threes the past few weekends. And for the Vols, you're looking at, hey, does Xander get through the lineup? Could he throw another gem like he did against Georgia and go 6 or 7 innings? But the key to the whole thing is kind of when you can place Snead in there at some point. Snead actually threw against Lipscomb. It got to that point where you needed your leverage guy, your number one leverage guy, and looked good. So they had to throw Snead out there for – what it was, 1 2/3 or something. Be interesting to see how quick they are to go with Snead, considering it's Thursday through Saturday.
Yeah, it will be. And of course, you know, you've had some really good bullpen performances, you know, the last couple of series that, you know, that's been the difference in some game in winning and losing some of those games. So yeah, you've gotten a good bullpen the last couple of weekends. That needs to continue, obviously, this weekend in Gainesville. If they can get the good bullpens again, get bullpen help, I think they'll be in pretty good shape.
My X factor for the weekend rotation, I mean, obviously, I kind of mentioned it, Pierce Coppola, but we still don't. Everything's still so raw and so new with him. Just don't know. But what I've got pretty good confidence in, a guy to watch for Florida, Jameson. He's got 11 strikeouts to just 1 walk in his last 9 2/3 innings. He went against FAU. And that's the thing. Florida, one of the storylines with Florida is, speaking of midweek trip ups, they've been terrible midweek games.
Right.
And when they do pick up a midweek win and squeak one out, then they're horrible on the weekend, and vice versa. You know, it's like they can't put a whole week together. But now, granted, some of the opponents you're talking about, like Florida State, a couple of times. FAU is a good club, yeah. But the Gators took down FAU 10-8. Fisher had to throw in that game. He gave up a couple of earned runs against the Owls. But before that, he came into that performance not giving up any earned runs in his last eight innings pitched. So he is the bullpen piece to watch. You know, I don't know. Maybe you get creative and have him open the game against Beam or something like that. But I think having Fisher available to use in leverage situations out of the pen and going ahead and planning for a couple of those times, maybe, you know, ideally a Thursday and a Saturday, I think that's what's to watch for as it pertains to the weekend rotation and the pitching side of things. If you're looking for the X factor this week at Crumbl, yet again, another amazing lineup. I've got to go with the churro cookie, Bill. That's the one I've got to go after, and it's a good line. They got blueberry muffin, peanut butter munch, along with the classics.
Oh, never a bad choice at Crumbl. I've never had a bad cookie there, so I haven't had the churro, but I'll take your word for it. Maybe one I will have to try this weekend.
Going with the churro for sure. Man, Bill, any last parting thoughts or shots before we head out of here?
Just a couple of things. First of all, you were talking about Florida's rotation. Yeah, you know, desperation weekend for them. They're going to throw anybody and everybody they have to in order to get wins this weekend.
Yeah.
So I don't think we'll see any shortage of arms on the mound for the Gators this weekend. You know, and again, for Tennessee, you know, it's not crisis time, but it's time that, you know, they need to get back on the right track with the bats. And, you know, I don't think they'll have problems doing that. I think they'll hit the ball in Florida. You know, the ball carries well in that stadium most of the time. And, you know, Tennessee tends to get it elevated and going. So if they can get it elevated and going, I think they can get back on the right track from a power standpoint. But it would be nice to see them win some games with, you know, hits other than the home runs as well. Because, you know, they're going to be, especially once you get in, if you should get to Omaha, you're playing in a big ballpark there. So, you know, let's see if we can prove that we can win games without hitting six, seven home runs in a game. And you know, I think we may see that this weekend. I think they're going to take it to heart and be ready to come out and swing the bat. So I'm looking for a good week in Tennessee. I could easily see a 2 out of 3. And, you know, if the chips fall where they may, even potentially a sweep. But I'm looking for 2 out of 3 this weekend.
I'll stick to the pitching side of things. And, you know, I hate the fact that Marcus Phillips last night, you know, gave up 3 earned runs in 2 innings. I wonder if we talked about him, albeit just 1 out, you know, he's breaking the ice up in Lexington in a big moment to seal that. I was hoping to see more of him in action against SEC opponents. You know, I hope that doesn't bust any confidence going forward after, you know, what happened with Lipscomb, but because gosh, there's an opportunity here for him to, you know, even if he's a guy for matchups, just 1 or 2 outs or something like that, a guy that can miss bats. Maybe we see, you know, Loy just went 2 innings, 31 pitches. Maybe we see him on the weekend. Andrew Binky, you know, he's going to be a lefty guy that could stabilize some of the lefty bats for the Gators.
Right.
But as far as the arms and the lead horse of the bunch, Drew Beam, you know, I wrote about it in a piece I did for Baseball Prospect Journal over the weekend. And, you know, I finally got the chance to kind of nail him down on one of the things he's been working with. And if you notice, the curveball looks a lot different this year. And it's been a journey for Beam this year in a lot of ways. And, you know, as he's trying down this stretch, he's trying to find, you know, an out pitch, a way to miss bats and everything like that. First 5 strikeouts for Beam against Missouri, caught looking. And then the last 3, which came in the 7th inning, you know, he struck out the side.
The seventh,
all swinging. And, you know, part of that was the curveball. And it's, you know, he's kind of formulating, kind of finding still finding his way with it. You know, he implemented it so well last season. About this time last year, it was, you know, towards the end of the season, and he carried it into the postseason. And it was kind of a new thing for teams to game plan for. And it was a little biter that was, you know, had a totally different shape than this year. Not a high usage pitch at all. But this year, a little bit of more of a slurve to it, east to west movement. But he's been mixing everything up. Came into the year with changeup being kind of the best graded pitch, but we've not seen a ton of it. But when we have seen it, when it looks good, it's great.
it's funny to say, you know, a guy like Beam in his third year, who's been so good since the first day he walked on this campus, he's still a work in progress. He's still learning, learning what he can do and what he does well, and trying to perfect some things. So yeah, he's still coming along, which is funny to say for a junior in his deep into his junior year, who's been a starter since day one. But he still is a work in progress.
Yeah, and this is a time of year that a lot of guys around the country. It's typical with guys who are kind of have a fastball slider combo and don't have a cutter yet or something like that. But a lot of guys will find a new pitch that works pretty good. And they'll go one example, the greatest example that I'll have for probably the next few years, a guy that here from the Smokies, you know, here in town, pretty much, Cade Horton. Yeah. He was on that Oklahoma team a couple years ago. And he had some projectability and some draft buzz and stuff, but then he found a cutter around April of that year, and he rode that thing all the way to Omaha in the title game and ends up being a first. He goes from, you know, the ceiling being like, can he sniff the first round, to he's a no doubt first round, and now you're seeing him called up.
And you see it in Major League Baseball every year when, you know, as the season goes on and people get a book, quote unquote, and start figuring out a little bit what pitchers are doing, they'll just make a slight change, you know, just change speed on something, just make that adjustment, make that change. They have to do that in order to be able to continue to get hitters out. Hitters are so good now, and there's so much analytics now that they can sit down and look at every pitch that guy's thrown to them all year long and before every game. So you have to make adjustments, and you know, that's what we've seen. We see guys like Beam do that. And that's why guys like Drew Beam are so good and continue to have so much success, is because they're able to make those adjustments.
Yeah. And it could be, you know, everything from, like I said, with Horton, is a totally new pitch, a new offering, you know, all the way around. But like, I could see a guy like Beam, like you mentioned, his pitch mix is so wide to begin with. That's the first thing I think of, is variety when it comes to him. With Beam, it could be like, hey, I've found this little component, this, you know, I'm able to get the shape that I need to, you know, on this curveball, or something. So that's kind of what I'm looking for, you know, with one of these guys, not just with Tennessee, but honestly around the country, you know, who kind of takes their game to the next level and finds that little thing mechanically, because that's, for some teams, you know, Cade Horton proved it a couple years ago. That could be all a team needs to for their lead horse to be a thoroughbred coming down the back stretch. And you never know where it can take you. So, man, it's been fun talking about Tennessee and Florida, Bill.
One last thing I want to talk about. University of Tennessee has another major league player now as of Tuesday. Yes. When Jordan Beck was called up to the Rockies, went 2-for-4 in his first game with the Rockies. So another member of that 22 team draft class from the University of Tennessee is in the bigs. And I venture to say he won't be the last that makes the bigs from that class.
No, thank you for mentioning, because I totally had this and just skimmed over it. Yeah, JB, my concho, he makes it to the show. And yeah, I was always interested to see between he and Gilbert. They'll kind of be attached for many different reasons.
Yeah.
But in terms of the draft, they were both, you know, drafted in the first round slash competitive balance round.
Right.
And I was always interested to see, you know, who makes it up first. I think Gilbert will be up, you know, this year as well, like maybe later down the road.
Gilbert's actually on the DL right now or IL, I guess it is now, with a back issue. So, you know, that could be the reason why Beck made it up first. You know, maybe not, but you're right. But I certainly expect Gilbert to be up at some point during this season.
I'm checking right now, see if I can get a live little update here. Okay, so Beck's 0-3 today. They're down 4-1 to the Marlins. Gosh, those are two terrible teams going at it. Yeah. Jordan Beck will have plenty of opportunity with the roster that he's dealt with. They're missing some power and some hitting right now. And man, I just can't wait to, surely they will keep this guy on the bus, on the plane, so to speak, until they make it home, because can you imagine that bat at Coors?
Oh, wow. Well, and not only the bat, but that arm playing the outfield in Coors as well.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting. You got him, Gilbert, Tidwell, is with Gilbert in the Mets organization. So, we've already seen Lipscomb called up. Man, it's a Dolander down the road. We'll be in the mix. So, yeah, it's just going to be a long line of volunteers from, you know, going back a couple of years and then and for the foreseeable future of quite the pipeline that Tony Vitello and the boys are building here. It's been fun to cover.
Absolutely, it has. And it's going to, the way he's recruiting and the kids that he's bringing on campus, it's going to be fun to cover them for years to come as well.
Absolutely. Well, we will get you all out of here. That's all we have for this episode. As we look ahead to Tennessee and Florida coming at you earlier this week, Thursday through Saturday, we will see you folks on the other side.
Are you struggling trying to find the right approach to a healthy lifestyle? HotWorks has all the tools you need. The infrared saunas provide many different ways for you to experience a fresh start. Join us at HotWorks today for the Summer Body Series. It's as simple as walking through the door at 10839 Hardin Valley Road. Enroll today for just $20 with the no prorated Fan Run Family Discount. Just call 865-297-3668. And don't forget to ask about teacher, student, and military benefits.